Good morning. Happy Sabbath. Happy Sabbath. Good. Oh, the way we talk about and we say Sabbath, it just sounds like such a curse. It's just so funny to me. Happy Sabbath. You dirty animal. Happy Sabbath. Yeah, such a blessing, though. It should be such a blessing. Happy Sabbath. Happy Sabbath. Good. We are moving through this disruptive series about a disruptive church. We understand that to be a Christ follower means we step into disruption. Jesus' message about this new reality come, this new kingdom, it flips everything upside down. It changes the way we live and view the world. It just flips everything upside down. And we understand that in this early church in Acts. They're beginning to get it. Before I go into this teaching entitled How to Disagree Without Losing Your Religion. Oh, can I just tell you I don't want to preach this one? I'll just leave it at that. Let me pray with you. God, I just thank you, praise you for the opportunity to be here every week looking at this incredible disruptive book that you've given us, the Bible. We thank you. In your name we pray, amen. Paul. We've been learning that Paul, all throughout these Gospels, and actually Peter too, in the very beginning, we have Peter and Paul, and they, everywhere they go, there's disruption. They get put in jail. They make a lot of people angry. Their message is very disruptive. And so we move from Peter, who's speaking mainly to a Jewish group of people, into Paul, Saul, who begins sharing a message that connects more to the Gentiles, which would have been the church writing this peace in Acts and in 100 AD. And again, this group that's writing this book, Acts, they're essentially getting issues from both sides. The Jews and the Gentiles are both persecuting them. Not easy. So they're writing about what it looked like to be a group of people who were one, who shared a really disruptive message. And so Paul's sharing all of this and he's gone everywhere. Next week, we're going to talk about Mars Hill, what that really was like. But today, we're going to talk about Paul heading home. How many of you, you're in college or right now, you have your own place and sometimes you go back home? Anyone with me on that? Yeah, sometimes you visit home again. How many of you have walked into your old room and it's not the same? You look there and you're like, Mom, that's where my bed was. Well, you can sleep on the floor, baby. What? But I don't even know how to sew. There's like 5 sewing machines in here. Isn't it great? Mom, I've been replaced by a sewing machine. You go home and it's different. Everything's different. Paul is going back to Jerusalem. He's going back home. The word Jerusalem, it means place of bread. Interesting. Because it's a place of nourishment. But what happens when you go back to a place and it's no longer home? What happens when the place that used to bring nourishment no longer does? I've got friends who they'll move somewhere and then they'll go visit again. And everything is just so different. I've had friends. One of my friends, he broke up with this girl years ago. They used to be so close. He broke up with her. And then he walks into his office one day. He hears about their new employer. He sits down at his desk and in walks his ex, who is now his boss. So awkward. So awkward. I love that someone just said they've been there. I won't call you out because I do that far too often, Nathan Smith. We have these moments of awkwardness where we go home and it's no longer home. And what happens when it's no longer home? I went back home, a place I'd been for almost 10 years. I went back to this place where there was so much joy, but also so much heartache. And I went back, and just like some of you, I went back to this faith community I was a part of, and I sat there, and I was Judgy Judgerson. I don't like what they did with the walls. I would have chosen a different color there, baby. Yeah, that's a winner. And I'm doing this, and I'm super judgy, because things have changed at home a little bit. This place is no longer a home, but then it hit me. While this thing has changed, while this place is not really home anymore, I have also changed. And because I've changed, things aren't quite the same. And so Paul is realizing he's changed. The gospel message is changing things. He's going back, and it's going to get really disruptive. And so when you get into Acts chapter 21, something really fascinating happens. Paul goes back home. But before he goes back home, he's in Tyre. In this place, the city Tyre, what happens there is he meets more disruption. Now here's the issue, though. Paul's been getting disruption and disagreements from everyone but his own community. Here's the crazy thing. I know all these miracles and everything have been hard to believe, but can you believe, now just pretend with me, can you imagine having disagreements with the people closest to you? I mean, can you imagine the body, the church, having disagreements? Like knockout, dragout fights? This seems crazy, doesn't it? Because we're people who sing kumbaya together. We hold hands and we sing songs and we're around campfires. Disagreements? These are actual pictures of churches. Yeah. Where people just lost control. And they fought and they argued. I laugh. Sometimes I hear people talk about church. And they'll talk about like this golden age where like everything was perfect. Oh, if you could have been here 40 years ago, we were all so close. We didn't have any of these arguments. It was perfect. But I like to do this to those people. I like to ask some questions. Oh yeah? What did you guys do during the weekends? What were your board meetings like? I like to ask questions. Because inevitably what will happen is this. Well, it was good, but, you know, Steve, we'd play Rook. I'm like, what's Rook? Well, we don't play poker, but we have these cards that have birds on them and this kind of... Anyways, Steve, he would play, and he always cheats. He's a cheater. Oh, really? Yeah, we used to get so mad at him. And that Margaret, I swear to you, she was putting chicken in the Special K loaf. And they start telling you all these stories. And you realize even the golden age wasn't perfect. Even in the golden age, there were still disagreements. There were still arguments. They didn't always agree on worship style even back then. That's when like the Gaither vocal band was like, that was serious. That was rock music to that group. They were constantly in disagreement even then. And so Paul, he goes back and he faces some disagreements. And we see this actually over and over in the book of Acts. Ananias, Sapphira, they're disagreeing over how someone's treated. Paul and Barnabas, these two who have been walking side by side, sharing the gospel message, they actually have a breakup. And it gets ugly. And Barnabas, we never hear from him again. We just follow Paul now. Peter and Paul, in the middle of a dinner, Paul stands up and he essentially gives Peter the smackdown right in front of everybody. Disagreements over and over again. Here's the thing about disagreements I'm finding. Some people I know, they're so terrified of disagreeing with people. Terrified of conflict. And so when a conflict comes, they'll just quickly, oh, I'm not hearing it, and they'll walk away. So scared of any kind of disagreement or conflict. Everyone's happy, and the reality is no one is happy. But here's what a disagreement should do. When we disagree with someone, it should actually bring growth. Did y'all hear me? Disagreement should bring growth. Not end relations, not destroy people. Disagreements should bring growth. Amen. They should bring conversation. They should bring people together who sometimes wouldn't be together. Now, in Jesus' time, again, very archaic time period, they had something called a two-party system. Really strange, right? Two groups of people who don't get along. So archaic, right? And in this culture, one of the groups was kind of seen as the counter voice. And what was happening in this very archaic time period was people began to side with one or the other. And it wouldn't even depend on the issue, really. Just, well, what did my side side with? Can you imagine where that could potentially lead a church or a people? So in this time period, there are two groups. One was Hillel and the other Shammai. And so within Judaism, they had this trend. They had this ritual. And what they would do is, again, they had two parties. And it started in around 200 BC. They always had two voices. And one of the voices was called Nasai. That's the president. And the other voice is called Av Bet Din. And this voice was like the head of the religious element of Judaism. So you had two different voices. Now, just before Jesus steps onto the scene, and a little in the middle of his time growing up, there were these two voices. There was Hillel and there was Shammai. Let me tell you what Hillel looked like. Hillel was a poor boy. He came from barely anything. His parents didn't know all the good people in their tribe. He had no connection. He had no money. But here's something interesting about Hillel. Hillel studied. He was not allowed into the house of prayer, the house of study. But this is what Hillel would do. The tradition says Hillel would go onto the rooftop of the house of study, and he would listen. And he would go and study this all. And before long, he had the kind of wisdom that no other rabbi did. So much so that they made him president. Shammai had all the deep connections. He was the name dropper. And he became the religious element. And so what you had here is one that deeply knew the law and the system. And the other who knew the heart of the law. And these two would go back and forth. Here's one of my favorite issues that these two had that they fought over. One of them was this. In Jewish tradition, when a bride came before the rabbi in this marriage ceremony, the rabbi was supposed to do this. They're supposed to compliment the bride. You're beautiful. You look just like Israel. Because they believed the bride was a symbolic point of Israel. Here's the question, though, that was posed. What if the bride's ugly? What if the bride is not beautiful? What was the question? Are you to smile and say the words that you don't mean? Some of you brides right now, you're just like, what? But that's the discussion they had. And Shammai, sure enough, he said, you know what? You tell the truth. Can you imagine brides going before the rabbi and the rabbi's like, you look very homely today. Thank you for coming. That's what Shammai said. No, we tell the truth. We always tell the truth. It's in the law. The law says so. Hillel said this. And we still say this today. The bride is stunning. The bride is always beautiful. It's her day. And she represents Israel, who is always beautiful, even though we don't always make great decisions and you just married that guy. You're so beautiful, bride. That's what Hillel said. And so the argument went back and forth, and they listened to the counter voice always. The counter voice is always respected. But at some point in time, we're told they side with Hillel, the progressive voice of that time period. Another point of contention they had, which is the second most famous one, is Hillel and Shammai, they have this group of people that come to them and they say, tell us the heart of the law. Shammai says, I'll go first. And he takes 2 days because he goes through every single facet of the law and what this and this means, and you must keep the law, and he goes through all of it. And the listeners are exhausted. They just listened to a 2-hour sermon. 2-day sermon. Can you imagine that? Some of you are like, I can't handle 30 minutes, Tony. Well, we're going for 2 days today, baby. Hope you took work off. We're chaining the doors. 2 days. At the end, they go to Hillel and say, okay, Hillel, heart of the law. Hillel says this. I will stand on this rock and I'll share with you the law. And we're told he stands on the rock and he says, love the Lord your God and love your neighbors yourself. And he stands off the rock. How many of you recognize those words? Yeah. Jesus quotes Hillel often. Because here's what happens often in Scripture. We get this idea that this group of people are trying to trap Jesus, to crucify him, which they kind of are in some way. But what they're asking is this: are you a Democrat or a Republican? Which side do you side with? And the reality was, over and over again, Jesus sided with Hillel. Over and over again, except for one thing that you'll see in Scripture. It's divorce. He always, though, gives the counter voice credit. Always listens to the counter voice. Because there in the counter voice, you hear the thing that's going to cause you to have to question and grow, even though you may not agree with the counter voice. The counter voice. In Hebrew tradition, we have these two individuals, Ish and Ah-Ish, man and woman. Ish means passion, fire, energy. Oh, right? Oh, man. Woman. We have this word, Ah-Ish, wisdom, love, balance, Ah-Ish. And when the two of them come together, they are supposed to be counter voices to the other. Men, if you ever find yourself saying, oh, my nagging wife, shame on you. She actually knows you better than anyone else. And she's sharing something that's going to cause you to grow. Take a moment and just listen. I know you don't want to hear that. And ladies, your husband's going to say some things, and sometimes they're hurtful. But sometimes they're going to share with you a glimpse of something that might cause you to grow. And pray they do it lovingly, or they're on the couch. The counter voice has the ability to help you grow. The counter voice is terrifying for the ego, though, isn't it? When you have to be always right, when you have to be always in control, what the counter voice does is it kind of pulls you back and says, you're not really in control. You don't have it all together. You're not the best. The counter voice is terrible for the ego that says, I, me, me, me. But the counter voice has the ability to cause you to grow. And so for the Hebrews, the counter voice was so important. So important. So Paul ends up about to leave for Jerusalem. And we're told, he says to this group of people, I'm going to go there. I could die. I'm going to go to this place that used to be home, used to be nourishment. It's no longer anymore. I am going back with a different kind of story. It's going to upset everything. I'm going to be crucified. But I am going. The Lord's will be done. I hope you make the connection there. The writers want you to connect this. Paul follows in the footsteps of Jesus. Not my will, but yours be done. But watch this. Here's what happens. The people say this. Through the Spirit, they urged Paul not to go to Jerusalem. What happens when two people are led by the Spirit and it leads them in a different direction? When two people disagree on something and they're felt they are led by the Spirit, yet the Spirit leads them in different directions, what do you do? What happens to a church community, a family, work, whatever? What happens when you have this Spirit leading in two different directions? Because we're told this. Both are right. They don't want Paul to go because he's going to face serious persecution. Things are going to end very poorly for Paul. Paul sees something different, though. He's going for a different reason. I see many people, when they disagree, they'll oftentimes do this. They'll want to spit it out. They'll want to get the person out of there as quick as possible, and they will do everything in their power, whether moral, ethic, or whatever, to get them out. Because that person represents a different way of looking at it. And that's terrifying for the ego, terrifying for the insecure. They'll demonize them. And here's the other thing. If I'm led by the Spirit, then you are not. And so we'll see this take place, and you'll see divisions, and you'll see this disruptions, because we don't always know how to disagree. We don't always know how to listen to the counter voice. Paul and this group of people, though, they do something interesting. The answer of how to disagree is right here, and how they respond. We're told they escort them out of the city, they pray for them, and they bid them farewell. My family, we have this tradition. And a lot of our friends, I've seen you, you look at us really strange when we do it. Because when many of you guys visit our house, we will walk you to the door. I can see it in some of your faces. You're like, we have been here too long. We're exhausted. The Werfels will not let us go. What other thing can we say to get out of here? I'm just messing with you. Right? And so you'll be leaving, and we'll walk right up to the door with you. In fact, we will go out onto the porch, and we look like these weird people from Pleasantville, because as you're leaving, we're going like this. Because we want you to know we genuinely love you, and we're so thankful that you came to our home. It's the little weird tradition we have. In that culture, when you are escorted through a city, this is what it meant. A visitor, a stranger, a foreigner, whatever it is, whenever you get there, that person, when it's time for them to go back home, walking through the city alone would be dangerous. And so what you do is you walk with them and you protect them because you want what's best for them. You want them to be safe. Think about this for a moment. The people you disagree with, the people you get frustrated with most, are you willing to walk with them? Even though they're going a direction you don't want them to go, are you willing to walk with them? Wish their safety for them. Are you willing to do that? In your disagreements, are you willing to walk with the other? It says they prayed for them. For a Jew, when you pray for someone, you are actually asking for blessings on the person. Now watch me. When you disagree with someone, what do your prayers look like for them? Lord, they're making a terrible decision. I know they're gonna fail miserably, but would you just give them a little blessing? Just a little, not too much, because I don't want them to think they went the right way. But just a little. That is so far from what the Hebrews believed about prayer. When that person chooses to go the opposite direction, chooses something you don't agree with, you pray that they are blessed and fully blessed in any direction they go. That God somehow continues to bless their lives. Hardest thing in the world to do. But when you are able to do it, the freedom you experience is incredible. And lastly, it says, they said farewell. He said farewell. The word here is to walk freely. When someone chooses something I don't agree with, when we have a disagreement, oftentimes I want to control it. I'm going to say, no, I want to control your actions. I want to control where this goes. But here's what the Hebrews are telling you. When someone chooses, disagrees, goes a certain way you don't like, you still are called to wish them well. You are called to walk freely, to allow them to do their thing, to say, I free you. And I'm not going to sit back and say things like, well, you dug your grave. Now you can lay in it. No, you are no longer free. You want to control it so much that you've essentially just imprisoned yourself. The freedom you receive when you allow others to walk freely is incredible. I'm learning a lot about the counter voice. I'm learning it's not easy. There's some steps I'm going and learning about myself. First off, I'm learning that I need to stop and take time to understand the other person's perspective. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're lawyers. You're like, yeah, I'll listen to them, but in the back of my mind, I'll be ready for my retort. Where's Christina? Do you know what I mean? You listen, but you're not really listening. Seek to understand their perspective, not so you can win a battle, but so you can truly understand who they are. Totally different. Look beyond your own triggers. Do you know there are certain words with some of you I know how to use and I can make a trigger on it? And I will set you off. Wordful. He just said that. There are certain words and certain ideas and certain phrases that trigger us. But here's the thing, it's not that person's fault, it's yours. You're allowing yourself to be triggered because there's an issue that you haven't dealt with. So maybe we learn what our triggers are, and when it comes up, I'm able to kind of remove myself from it and say, that was a trigger, and I'm not going to allow it to cause me to react the way I usually do. Oh. Look for similarities over differences. Listen, don't be a bobblehead. Take responsibility for your own feelings. Ah! I was with a friend this week who teaches me so much about life. And I'm talking with these people, and someone says in this conversation, they say, you made me feel this way. And my friend, brilliant. I never would have caught it because I use this all the time. You made me, they made me. He said, excuse me, but you chose to feel that way. You could have chosen to be happy. You didn't have to choose to have that response, but you chose to. Why? Oh, now we get into interior work. Now we got to look at the why. You can choose your response and your feelings. Only you are in control of that, not them. They didn't make you feel anything. You allowed yourself to feel that thing. And in conversation, try your best to take responsibility for the feeling you have. That person made you angry, that's on you. They may have been a cause to your anger, but you're allowing yourself to respond angrily. Lastly, use positive language. Find ways to use positive language. I am learning that in the disagreement, in the counter voice is where I grow the most. I may not agree with the person, but I'm learning to listen and hear it and ask, what can I do to grow? Let me end with this. There was two farmers. One was a cattle farmer and the other a vegetable farmer. And sure enough, these two families, they loved each other. They did Thanksgiving and Christmas, and every time a birthday came up, the two families would come together. Beautiful. Well, cattle, vegetables. Every once in a while, the cattle would cross over and eat some of the vegetables. And what would happen is the vegetable farmer would be so frustrated. Hey, your cattle ate my vegetables! Don't worry, I'll send little Sue over. She'll give you a T-bone. That's a T-bone steak, by the way, for some of you. But this conflict, it got worse and worse. And before you know it, the two families, they're barely speaking anymore. And it keeps getting worse and worse, and the tensions keep growing. And before you know it, they haven't talked in years. They keep themselves completely segregated from the other. And one day, as it turns out, the straw that breaks the camel's back is this. A little cat, pregnant, shows up on the vegetable farmer's door. And the family just, oh, she's so cute. And they take care of the little kitty. And the little kitty has other kitties. And oh, it's so cute. And they're just loving. But the cattle farmer, he walks over and he says, hey, that's my cat. I want it back. And the vegetable farmer will have nothing to do with it. He says, no, it's ours. Get off my property. And you know how it goes. Usually there are issues underneath that keep building. And the one thing that actually breaks it, it seems pretty minimal. But at the moment, in the heat of the battle, that thing is so important. Well, this did it. The families were through. 3 years. Don't talk. Just kind of see each other from afar. One day, the vegetable farmer, he's having dinner with his family. And he looks out and he sees that stupid old cattle farmer and his tractor, and he's got behind the tractor a bunch of wood and bricks, and he's taking it to the far end of the pasture, and he's thinking, what's this idiot doing? What's he gonna build? And so he waits. Later that night, he gets out there with his flashlight and he sees this cattle farmer's building a fence. In fact, it almost kind of looks like a wall fence. He's not a good builder, obviously. Brick and wood, it just looks terrible. And he says, okay. He wants to build a wall, I'll build a better wall. So he goes on the opposite side, and he starts building his wall. He's checking out if it's level, he's doing all of it. And they start building their walls. Periodically, they'll walk over to each other and say, hey, nice wall. Hope the wind doesn't blow too much. It's falling over. They jab at each other. But something interesting happened is they spent over a year building this hideous looking wall. And they got closer and they got within earshot of each other. And they start yelling words at each other. But after a while, it just gets exhausting. And not one hits their finger with a hammer. Oh, and the other says, oh, I just did that. I could barely hold a hammer right now. And they keep talking. Before you know it, they're talking about the weather. And they're getting closer and closer. And before you know it, they're within 4 feet of each other building this stupid wall. They've been talking a lot lately. And the one farmer, the vegetable farmer, he says, how's the family, man? And the cattle farmer, he kind of stops, drops his hammer, kind of puts his hands on the wall for a minute, and just looks out over the pasture. Puts his hands in his pocket. Still doesn't look over at the vegetable farmer. The vegetable farmer kind of looks at him and he sees a lot. It sure doesn't look like sweat pouring down this man's face. The man says, my wife died last year. Would have been good to have would have been good to have your family there. And the vegetable farmer, he looks over at the cattle farmer. He says, you know, I know it was your darn cat. I know it wasn't my cat. I'm sorry. And these moments lasted for eternity. And finally, the cattle farmer turns and says, I think maybe it's time we stopped the wall. And we just built a door that swings open between our families again. I think it's time. Because the world, we have a lot of walls, don't we? We have a lot of segregation between us. over what at the time seems like such an important thing. We're so good at building walls. But the world does not need more walls. The world needs more open arms. The world needs more accepting, loving people. The world needs more doors that swing open for community. The world does not need more walls. The world needs loving, accepting Christ followers. The world needs wide open doors.